Welcome to Batescast, a series of podcasts delving into all things legal as we adjust to the new normal. We hope that these bite-sized insights will help you to understand and navigate this period of global uncertainty. In today's episode, we're talking about the unprecedented challenges faced by fundraisers in the current crisis and how they can plan for the future. I'm joined today by Laurie Simanovitz, a partner in Bateswell's charity and social enterprise team, and Dan Flosky, head of policy and external affairs at the Institute of Fundraising. So Laurie and Dan, thank you both for joining us today. The charity Trade Press is reporting that fundraising levels have dropped to historically low levels. Dan, would you be able to give us a brief recap on what you're hearing from heads of fundraising across the sector?
Yeah, sure. And thank you for the invitation to join you today for this podcast. When we've been talking to charities, to heads of fundraising, it is a pretty bleak picture in many cases. In lots of organisations, they've experienced a big initial loss already in terms of money that they would have expected to have raised over the end of March, April and into May. You know, whether that's from high profile events like the London Marathon or from their own activity that they had planned, whether that's public fundraising, going out there recruiting donors or through running their own events and community fundraising overall. And from that piece of work, it was estimated that in the first 12 weeks of the crisis that charities would stand to lose just over £4 billion worth of income. Wow. It really fell off a cliff from 20-ish of March onwards. A big chunk of that will be donations and fundraising activity, which they had planned for and now just can't raise. Charities are able to do some, and they've been really flexible and creative and innovative. But I think we have to be realistic about what that can achieve in the face of such huge financial loss.
Sure. And Laurie, you're seeing the after effects of some of these issues coming to you in the form of client queries as well, aren't you? What have you been hearing from clients?
And firstly, just to say, nice to be joining you both today. And Dan, that picture you paint is a pretty bleak one. And it seems like nothing the sector has ever seen before. One of the things that's actually surprised me is that I think we would have expected to see more disputes over things like, you know, last minute cancellations of events, deposits back, refunds, breaches of contracts, and so on. And we've seen a little bit, but not very much of that. And I think that's partly because, you know, people have tried to behave decently. They've tried to resolve things themselves without involving lawyers. I suspect we may see more disputes coming to us if those friendlier methods of resolution fail to work. Really, I mean, we've seen a few try-ons. We've seen fundraising companies that have tried to put the pressure on charities to help bail them out or tide them over. And you know, you can understand why they're doing it. But of course, the charities themselves are struggling with their own funding shortfalls. Also worth noting the recent announcement from the Chancellor that if charity events are cancelled, but those who are going to attend, who've bought tickets, say, if they say the charity can keep the money as a donation, then gift aid can be claimed on it.
Thanks, Laurie. We actually wrote an article covering this back in April. And if you want to access that, you can find it on our coronavirus hub at bateswells.co.uk. Laurie, do you feel that this is a moment when lotteries could become an effective way of raising money for organisations who are struggling? Is this an idea whose time has come?
Yes, I really think it is. In fact, even before coronavirus, we'd seen an upsurge of interest in lotteries for a number of reasons. The first was that GDPR, the fundraising code, had caused a reduction in the way that charities had felt they could fundraise towards individuals and were turning to lotteries as a way of boosting their income. Sometimes that reduction was based on misunderstandings, things like charities believing consent is always required to contact individuals because there are circumstances where consent isn't required. But another reason why people were already starting to look at lotteries again is that the People's Postcode Lottery has been building momentum and it's been making special arrangements with a number of charities. I would just comment as an aside on that we've had to review quite a few of those because the People's Postcode Lottery terms are not always even handed. There are often sticking points. And in some cases, we've even had charities turn around and not come to an agreement with People's Postcode Lottery just because the terms are unacceptable. The third thing that was sort of encouraging charities to get into lotteries even before coronavirus is that the government's changed the rules and they've made a small increase to the amount of prize money that can be awarded, but a large increase in the amount of ticket sales that can be covered by one lottery license. There's a pitfall there because those new rules also place greater requirements on transparency. The other thing I just mentioned in relation to lotteries is we're advising quite a lot on the difference between lotteries and other types of similar fundraising activity, which doesn't fall technically into the definition of a lottery. So I'm talking here about things like prize draws and competitions. And many charities don't want to have to comply with gambling regulation. They don't want to have to get licenses. So they go for these other types of activity. But it is important to make sure that they don't inadvertently cross the line and become lotteries, because if they do and they haven't got a license and they haven't done things properly, then they're going to be non-compliant. So that's just a pitfall to watch out for.
Thank you, Laurie. Dan, now that it looks like lockdown is about to begin to be eased, how are fundraisers and charity leadership teams feeling about the medium and long-term prospects for the sector?
We're going to be working with the fundraising regulator on some guidance to help organisations, because charities will want to know they can go about fundraising in a safe and responsible way. It's important that they have a framework to work towards. It will have to absolutely cover to make sure that fundraisers have appropriate safety equipment or PPE to ensure that they are can be safe and protected in their work. It will also be about making sure that the public are feeling reassured and confident that if they see fundraising happening, that they know that that's happening in an ethical and a responsible way. We are still on the upward curve of the longer term financial and economic problems that come from coronavirus. So in terms of what that means for fundraising, how donors will respond if there's a recession, if a huge number of people are laid off and made redundant, how corporate partners are able to support the sector in terms of donations and corporate support, all of that will be affected by the economic situation that's going to be coming in the months ahead. So fundraisers are going to want to put in place strategies and plans which aren't just about, well, we're going to go back and go, this was a 3-month blip and now we're going to go back to our strategy and plans as they were before, because the goalposts are going to have shifted and we need to shift alongside them. Now, that doesn't mean people should not be fundraising, but I think it does mean that we need to be really mindful and considerate and sensitive in how we make those approaches and how we work with supporters. The other thing, I guess, is a bit more internal, which is how teams are going to work, how, you know, what's a fundraising team going to look like for the rest of the year across the sector, not just in fundraising. You know, staff have been furloughed, people have been working on reduced capacity, people have been working from home. So I think strategies and plans are going to have to be nimble, they're going to have to be iterative, they're going to have to be reviewed as the situation changes. That does make it hard, obviously, to have firm plans. And I think it's not about having a firm plan that you follow to the letter. It's about having an overarching strategy with the necessary times to review things, to take on board new information, to see how donors are responding. And essentially, it is going to be trying to get through as best we can.
Yeah, no, so I completely agree with that, Dan. And it's very difficult to talk about the sector as a whole, because some bits of the sector in the short term are inevitably seeing a boost in their fundraising if you're fundraising for NHS causes or food banks and so on. So what we're seeing is all kinds of different initiatives going on, and the sector is being very creative. You've got the 2.6 challenge. The one we haven't mentioned really is different types of corporate partnerships. And obviously some of them, if you've got a corporate partnership with an airline, there's not going to be a lot of money coming from the airlines at the moment. But in other sectors, tech companies and so on, there might be more money available. So there's so much shifting going on. And I think it's quite difficult to talk about the prospects without recognizing that there is just going to have to be such a big change.
Looking ahead to specifically the next quarter, are there any issues or pitfalls that you're anticipating charities will need to watch out for?
Yeah, I think it's important that charities take a risk-based approach. So if you're a charity and you're going to be getting a significant gift, you know, a really significant gift or donation, or there's a big partnership, for example, we'd say, and I think Dan might agree, that it's a false economy just to cut back on the legal advice. Where we're also seeing lots of enthusiasm from corporates.
But what they're often trying to do, that they may be overexcited, they may be inexperienced, they're often trying to impose inappropriate conditions. They're giving contracts which are not compliant, which don't get the charity law bits right, or simply they pull a contract off their shelf and it's inappropriate, it's unduly onerous, because it's the kind of contract that they would use in a hard-nosed commercial agreement, and they've just adapted it or even not adapted it. And it's really important that charities, in their enthusiasm, don't just grab the money and sign it without taking any advice at all. So what I would say in terms of guidelines on this is that the time not to cut costs on legal is if the agreement's high value, if it's something innovative, which could mean it's riskier, if the partners are asking for, or even if they're just getting a lot in return, if the arrangement is covered by regulation, by the information commissioner, the fundraising regulator, the charity commission, or if it's going to be a high profile agreement that can lead to reputational risk. Also, if the agreement or the arrangement with a partner is particularly complex. So in those type of situations, I'd strongly recommend that legal advice is obtained.
Absolutely, yeah. I was listening to or reading something yesterday which was trying to talk about what the definition of a crisis was, and definition of a crisis for them was a set of circumstances during which if you don't make the right decisions, you're not going to survive as an organisation. And I think that's really important, because yes, we're kind of getting kind of hit and pummeled on so many different things at the moment, but we can still make decisions, and we do still need to make those decisions in a responsible way and in a way that's right in the long-term interests of our organisation. So absolutely, you know, there are going to be times where, you know, you might prefer in the short term to have kind of thought, well, can we cut some of that legal advice or support or external professional help? But we still are in a time where we do need to be thinking about the longer term interests of the organisation, not just about cutting costs, you know, to save us a bit of money for the end of the month. And the organisations that get through this crisis are going to be the ones, it's not just going to be about luck, it's going to be the ones that made the right decisions to get them through it.
Dan, what are the three key things that fundraisers can do to address the shortfall in donations which has happened since lockdown?
Okay, so I think first of all, I'd say we need to be realistic about what we can do. It's great to be doing fundraising right now. People will respond and want to feel connected, but we do need to be realistic. We need to be supporting teams, not putting undue pressure on them, especially where teams have got furloughed staff and reduced capacity. So number one, have a realistic approach. Number two, be authentic and responsive to what people are feeling. You know, doing fundraising well now isn't sending out the direct mail appeal that you had written 2 months ago and changing the subject line. It has to resonate to what people are feeling now, what they'll be experiencing, and grounded in that reality. And that might mean that you need to do it quickly. It might mean that it won't be perfect, it won't be shiny, but it will be authentic. And authenticity and that connection is going to be the thing which really creates and generates a response. Number three, let's not try to do everything. Let's pick out the things which we can do and make sure we do them well. And we need to prioritize. We will need to be mindful that we can't do everything across the board. Let's prioritize and let's do what we can do and concentrate on doing that well and not kill ourselves for not being able to do everything.
And I'd just add one more to that, which is have a look again at your database. Charities were often overzealous in the way they restricted themselves from fundraising to their supporters. And there may well be more that you can do in a compliant way.
And of course, the Institute of Fundraising has guidance, which we've contributed to, which you can find on their website. And of course, take legal advice if you need to. So finally, if you had one key message you'd like our listeners to take away from this, what would it be, Dan?
So from my perspective, I think it is going to be about thinking about the supporter and thinking about the supporter in the round and giving not just as a transaction, but the connectivity that that person has with a cause, with something outside of their front door. At these times where people are anxious and stressed or in financial worries, being able to connect and feel part of a community will make people feel better, feel more positive, inspire them and actually help them through a difficult time that they might be having. So absolutely think of this as a service, if you like, which is helping people as a consequence, you will be raising money, but put that person first and you'll be doing some great fundraising.
And I'd have one key message, which would be, don't be frightened to push back. If you're offered a large gift, if you're offered a great deal, you generally won't put a donor or a partner off just because you want to take a pause, take a look at the small print, consider whether the deal is compliant. Just as an example, if you didn't get the VAT right, you might lose 20%, which could have been avoided if you'd raised that as an issue at the outset, rather than just accepting what's on offer. And finally, I'd just say that although this is a period of great difficulty, we've talked today about some of the things that can be done, and there are positive steps that can be taken, new types of initiatives, new ways of doing things.
Thank you both so much for your insights. And just to add that we do have plenty of resources available on bateswells.co.uk, as well as the Institute of Fundraising's website as well. Thank you for your contributions, both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. In our next edition, we'll be looking at the key considerations for employers as the UK looks ahead to a return to work. In the meantime, on behalf of everyone at Bateswells, we hope you all stay safe.